Now, there's nothing wrong with these two. This is real, real, real good shit. But this one is a fucking madman.
Remember, I just got back from Amsterdam.
Am I a nigger? Are we in Inglewood?
No.
You were in my home. Now, white people who know the difference between good shit and bad shit, this is the house they come to.
What is it, man?
No, I never touch the stuff.
Oh, that's okay. I'll hold it for you.
You take drugs, Danny?
Every day.
Good.
Wait! We can't stop here. This is Bat Country.
And hello again. Welcome to the SweetFeatheryJesus.com podcast. I'm the site admin and the host, Belasco. With me is, from London, Booze. How you doing, Booze?
Hello.
And Dr. P. How you doing, Dr. P?
Hey, man. Glad to be here.
Good. Tonight is going to be another fun one. We discussed embarrassing bodily functions on episode 3, and I think we determined, kind of as a side conversation, that we've got to discuss drug stories next, and so that's what we're going to be covering tonight. Now, unfortunately, I'm going to be mainly sitting this one out because I really don't have any.
Well, me and Dr. P were talking about this a little bit, and we have got quite a lot. But I'm going to leave out the time that I saw the dwarf with wearing a diamond-studded waistcoat at a party whilst I was on LSD. I'm going to leave out the time also while I was tripping when me and my mate went into a pub and sat down at a table in an empty pub. By the time we went to get up, we couldn't. We were stuck, literally stuck on the table. We couldn't work out how we managed to sit down and get under this table, and now we couldn't get out. The pub had filled up, and we had to literally crawl underneath the table to get out in front of a packed pub. And also the time that I went to a party while I was tripping and I trod in something that I thought was mud, but by the time I'd wiped it off on this girl's bed in this bedroom we were in, my mate had convinced me that it was in fact dog shit.
I still
don't know. As soon as he said it, because of the very nature of the beast, Belasco, as soon as he said it, I started smelling dog shit, but who knows? It might have been chocolate mousse for all I know.
Could have been a chicken wing.
But I have got one story about when me and my friends used to go out tripping quite a bit, doing acid, when I guess I would have been about 17, 18 at the time. And you're supposed to go out and do these things, as we all know, on a beautiful sunny day in a park, you know, where you can relax and be away from other people. But we always seem to do it in the middle of winter on a foggy night and go to a place where there were tons and tons of people that we had to interact with socially. Because I think we knew that it would be funnier. We'd have funnier stories to tell afterwards. It was pretty much hellish at the time. I've got to admit, I could never work out what we were doing, you know, and why we were doing it, but it was very cheap. I know that.
It was hellish. Well, I guess that does kind of make it funnier for everyone else.
It was hellish, and particularly this night. We used to go to a pub, and I'm talking about 14 or 15 of us. You know, we weren't like a little discreet little number who could sit in a corner. We used to go to this pub on a Saturday night, tripping our nuts off. We'd buy one pint and all sit around this gigantic table that looked like something King Arthur had knocked up. And just sit there and nurse our one pint and trip our balls off and talk rubbish to each other. And then, you know, until the last bell went and we had to go somewhere else. And there was always a rumour of a party somewhere, you know, normally with a dwarf wearing a diamond-studded waistcoat at it. But this night, this particular night, there wasn't a party. So we were just walking down the road, kind of, you know, onto wherever we were going to go. And I should point out, my best friend at the time, Jay, had a broken foot, right? So he's on crutches. And so we were bringing up the rear of this 15-man posse. And we're walking down the road, and we see a little Mini Cooper pull up at the head of the group. And this is back before the new style Mini. So don't, I know you're thinking of the new style Mini now. Put that out of your mind. It was the old style Mini.
A box on wheels.
That's it. Yeah, not the Matt Damon version.
Right.
The new one. So we eventually managed to struggle up there. And it turns out it's this girl in the car. Early 20s, I would say, on her own, asking for directions to Highgate, which is bloody miles away. You know, she goes, oh, I'm lost. I've been going round and round and round. I remember her saying that a lot. Going round and round and round looking for Highgate. I can't find it. I said, well, no, you're miles away, love. But my mate Shane was there.
Oh.
And who you might have heard of before.
Yes, you mentioned him before.
Yes, I will mention him again. Especially in the drug stories. He lived not too far away, about a 10-minute walk, unless you had a broken foot, in which case it was about 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. So he says to her, my ass is just around the corner. Oh, yeah, that's it. She was busting for the toilet. You know, she goes, is there a public toilet around here? I'm absolutely busting for the toilet. Shane says, well, my house is just around the corner. She goes, okay, well, thanks a lot. About five guys try and pile in this Mini, leaving the other 10 of us there, and they drive off, right? So we're thinking, well, hang about. Why would Shane invite this girl back to his house unless his parents were away for the weekend, which they frequently were at this time because we used to go around there quite a lot after our, you know, trips down the pub. So we're figuring he's got an empty house, all kinds of debauchery going on. By the time we get round there, or at the very least, there'd be something funny going on that we could talk about afterwards. Whatever it is, we don't want to miss it, right?
Right.
So, five guys in the Mini, and the rest of us struggling off behind, and I'm with my mate, so we end up getting there about 20 minutes later. Now, there's a little bit of backstory. Shane's dad is kind of like an Irish Charles Bronson, you know, completely anti-drugs, vigilante type. Massive moustache, and we were all very scared of him.
Now, you don't mean the Charles Bronson, the notorious English prisoner, right?
No, the real one.
The real one, okay.
The real movie dead, star.
The real dead one out of The Great Escape.
Got it.
Yeah. And the Death Wish films, which is, you know, what I'm thinking of specifically right now. So, and also, to add to that, Shane, whenever Shane used to go out and take drugs, and his dad used to say, where have you been? And he used to work with his dad as well, so he'd turn up with his pupils completely dilated, you know, to work with his dad in the morning, Shane would always say, I've been with booze. And that hasn't stopped, by the way. He still uses me as an excuse now, even if I haven't been with him, like to his missus. On this night, we get round there, and I went, I had to go to the toilet. I was absolutely busting myself. So I went... I went to the toilet, so I'm literally the last of us to enter his living room. And I'm expecting, you know, just maybe some music playing, the TV on, everyone chatting up this bird or whatever's going on. I walked in, and the living room door is in the middle of the living room wall. And so one, like, if you go to the right, you've got the lounge area.
Okay.
And if you go to the left, you've got the dining room area. Okay? I looked to the right. I looked to the right. There's Shane. There's this girl who none of us can remember her name now, but we call her Mildred because that seems to fit her.
She was an older lady?
She was in her early 20s. We were like 17.
Yeah, okay.
Like so older enough.
Mildred.
Prim and proper. Yeah, so there's Shane. There's Mildred. There's Shane's dad. And there's Shane's mum. And on their laps... They've all got the best china out, cup of tea, and a salsa. And they're all sitting there, and it's like lovely sort of genteel tea party, basically. I look to the left, to the dining room area. There's everyone else. No one wanted to sit down. And there's two armchairs are taken up. There's another armchair free. There's a four-seater sofa with Shane's dad and his mum sitting on it, uh-huh. but two seats free on that, and all the rest of the 14 dudes are either seated at one of the four seats at the dining table or sitting on the floor behind the dining table as far away as you could get from this ridiculous scene that they've wandered into and don't want anything to do with now. Right? So I walked in, and Shane's dad knows me, and I can't really go and hide behind the dining table because somewhere in the back of my mind, I know that that would be ridiculous and not the thing to do in that social situation, even though I'm tripping my bollocks off and I can't really form a proper thought in my mind. So I had to go and sit down on the other end of this sofa next to Shane's mum and dad and Shane and Mildred and kind of brass it out, you know. So I sat down and Shane's dad goes to me, "Oh, you all right, Lee?" And I said, "Oh, all right, you know, how's it going?" Sat down, and of course, Belasco, if you've never done acid, you still know what some of the properties are.
Sure.
Which is your time perception just goes out the window.
Right.
It does not exist.
No, and so in any kind of, you don't want to be having to worry about any kind of social niceties, you know, because it's virtually impossible. What you really want to do is freak out. You remember that YouTube video of the wizard with the tiny penis at the festival who ended up getting tased by it? You want to be him. You want to be out there flapping free and freaking out, not worrying about, you know, whether to stick your pinky finger out when you're lifting up a bone china cup to your lips. So I sat down, and I'm trying to keep it all together. I look at Shane, and Shane looks at me with it was a look of horror upon his face, of like, what the fuck is going on here? Well, it was his fault. He instigated all this. He knew his parents were at home, you know, but we're in it now, and we've got to get out of it. So we're sitting there, and Shane's dad is talking to Mildred. Shane's just kind of like looking off into space. Shane's mum isn't saying anything. And I can't remember what the conversation was between them. But all I can remember is like thinking, okay, what should my face look like now? What should I be doing with my hands? How should my legs be normally? You know, everything, every single little aspect of the way I was sitting, of the way I was acting. I was trying not to drift off into a reverie, you know. And I'm trying to stay there, rooted in the time. And but then, I mean, even in that state, at the back of my mind, I'm thinking, what does Mildred think is going on here? She's been invited back. She's been invited back to someone's house to use their toilet, and she's ended up with 15 blokes, an old married Irish couple, having a cup of tea. Shane's gurning away in the corner. You know, is she thinking, am I ever going to get out of this alive? Are they going to put, have they got a cellar? You know. And I kind of got my answer at the end, because everything went quiet for a little while, or a million years, or 2 seconds. I don't know how long. And then she kind of puts her cup down on her saucer on her lap and goes, "Right, I've finished my tea. Can I go now?" Not.
Not.
Yeah, Mildred being Mildred, of course, she had to accept the offer of the cup of tea that I guess would have come from Shane's mum, being a nice Irish lady that she is. And then, you know, the stragglers would have come round, and there'd be knock after knock on the door as it's like, you know, the rest of the group sort of turned up disparately. And then me and Jay with him on his crutches. And, oh, fuck, no. I mean, I still think about it now. Apparently, Shane's dad didn't realise what we were doing, but that was just out of ignorance. He would have assumed that we were on some drugs. Well, we've been drinking, so I guess Shane blamed it on that. But I do remember like talking to Shane afterwards, because Shane disappeared as well for about 10 minutes in the middle of this and left me there with like a gallery of lunatics up the other end, and me just trying to kind of hold the fort in this nice tea party situation on my own. And apparently he went up to his sister's room. His sister was in, who was about 16 at the time. And he went knocked on the door and demanded, he said, "This is a setup, ain't it?" He was completely convinced that his sister had set up this woman to come down the road and ask us, you know. because he lost it. He completely lost it, which I didn't know about until afterwards, and I'm so glad about that. Otherwise, I would have lost it too. Yeah, so she eventually went, and there's like all 15 of us kind of waving her off outside the house as she goes off into the night in a Mini Cooper with her bladder. Well, it's probably full again now after tea. You know, thinking of her lucky escape. She was the one that got away, and then we went off into the night, and apparently we got away with it. But yeah, Jesus Christ. We still talk about that now. That's the one story that we all bring up between each other. It's just lucky that his mum was there. If his mum weren't there, then she would have really thought, Jesus, what is going on?
We'll call that one Can I Go Now?
Can I go now?
May I be excused forever?
She made her excuses, didn't
she? Yes, she did. God damn it. Well, I was going to follow up with a dripping story, but I don't know. I was working sound for this motivational speaker.
And oh, I love it already.
No, dude, I like work the soundboard, and he was really intense. Seriously, he had studied under Anthony Robbins, and it's a long story, but quick as I can make it, I worked the soundboard and recorded the seminars. That was my job.
Okay.
And, you know, it was about 90% women. Most were either older or hippie or, you know, just like kind of not
larger,
my thing.
But I'm guessing.
Yeah, often, yeah. But there were always hot young chicks who were complete dummies and needed someone to tell them how to live their lives, and that's what this guy did, I guess. But there were, when you took the job, there was a written agreement that I not take advantage of anyone, you know, or it was worded real specifically, but they changed it when I took the job to no physical relationship between staff and clients. These girls are vulnerable, agree not to be a fucking...
I saw you and said, no, ain't a right.
Well, you would think that, you know, but yeah, you know, they changed it to just don't prey on them, you know, and life's good. So... Anyway, I took the job, and I had signed all kinds of, like, morality clauses. I really had.
And the no sexual predator clause, right?
Yeah, pretty much, because you could fuck whoever you wanted outside of the class, and maybe inside of the class if, you know, you weren't being a complete tool about it, I guess is what they were saying. But enter Melissa. She was a cute blonde and would have been a 10 and way out of my league. But she had kind of bad skin and wore hooker makeup to cover it up.
Self-esteem problems, I would guess, if she's gone to
that
thing.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, she had an amazing body. She beautiful hair, everything. And her face was really pretty, but she did, like, pancake makeup. But she's foxy as all fuck, though. We hung out and partied a few times when she would do classes. And then she started taking every fuck class. Also, one of the written agreements was not to ingest drugs or alcohol the whole time you're doing the class. And that's for students and anyone staffing it. You just don't get fucked up. We didn't need adhere to that one. You know, we went to bars and hung out and stuff. But anyway, she wanted to try ecstasy. She had never done it. As it turned out, I had a scumbag buddy who DJed a local strip club and could get that shit real easily. And so I got two doses for us.
Do you still know him?
No, I don't. In fact, he disappeared. So that's I could totally segue, but like he vanished. But anyway, well, she comes to town and starts saying she might consider moving to Asheville.
Oh God,
That's not you know what I wanted to hear. You know, oh, and she totally hadn't. ADD piece of shit kid too. This little kid. no, and dude, I kind of like kids. I really do, you know. But he was about two the first time she ever came. And little fucker, I'll never forget. One time he stomped his foot and like folded his arms across his chest and yelled, "Me now!
Really?
Me Jesus Christ. Now!" We weren't paying attention to him.
Wow.
Yeah, and he only got worse.
Out the window.
You know. because this whole story, well, building up to this, took like 2 or 3 years, not that long, but a kid grows a fuckload in that time. And when she came in town one time, she was looking for houses. So, you know, I drove her around and would see for sale by owner, or, you know, we looked at a few houses, but not like as a couple. I just, you know, hey, here's the neighborhood. Here's the
house. This one's far enough away from me. Why don't you take this house?
Anyway, we look at this house for her and her fucking hell spawn, and she meets the neighbors. A couple about our age, middle class, no kids. They were cool enough. But they invite us out to this expensive restaurant downtown that night. You know, I was expecting to be prancing about like a Ted on ecstasy, as Lee yes. would say, then getting laid. But no, what does she say when they go, hey, let's go out to this restaurant? Okay. And she knew I had the fucking drugs. But anyway, we went on the patio, and there they are. We share a bottle of wine, order our meal, you know. And just all this in my head is, as soon as these people leave, we'll have some fun. But I don't know. I made a judgment error. I slide the pill to her under the table, and we both eat them and look at each other going, yeah, we just said X. And by the end of the dinner, by the end of the dinner, it's kicking in. And, you know, but we can still make out of this okay. And I'm trying to drag her away. But the guy of the couple is acting all concerned about her. And, of course, my first thought is he thinks I slipped her a roofie or some shit.
Dude,
and I might have been right and not paranoid. I might have. I don't know. You know, I was so drug clouded. I really don't know if I can just go, yeah, I was out of my mind thinking he thought that. But
well, this is the thing, because it's a hard one to hide the physical signs. Your jaw starts going and your eyeballs start rattling. It's tough to hide.
You're sitting there grinding your molars into dust, and they're wondering.
You're refusing dessert.
But we're both doing this. You know, we're both in the same state. But anyway, I'd give them the excuse we're going to see a band later at the place I worked the door for. And this asshole and his wife wanted to go with.
For fuck's sake.
So the four of us get there, and dude, we are tripping like shit as we're even getting in line. And it's a pretty goth scene that night. I had no idea who was playing or what was going on. So we're hanging out at a table and, you know, they didn't even have a liquor license. It was a real hellhole. But at some point I get back from a piss and Melissa tells me, I informed him we were on ecstasy. And it's like, fuck. That's all I can think. Jesus Christ. Now they feel like babysitters. And, you know,
why
I get back.
Why would she do that? Why would she tell
Because
them?
She's on drugs and she's stupid, dude. I just wanted to walk out, you know. I get back to the table. And, dude, the cool thing is I can see the wife just wants to leave. And the dude does not. The fucking cock blocker. I mean, or fun blocker. I mean, he's just like, oh, I have to oversee everything. Oh, I hated him. But at some point, this buddy of mine shows up and says, dude, I got something. And I guess I just expected everyone or, you know, was cool. And I gave that vibe to him. But he just whips out this huge bud of marijuana in the back. And the wife and husband start arguing all of a sudden. And then the dude starts yelling at our bro, saying something about, you can't just flash drugs around, dude. That's not cool. And it was so weird. And, like, I'm trying to tell Melissa, it's all right. It's not a big deal. But then the wife and husband start arguing, you know, and they're going back and forth. And the couple leave. And, you know,
does this mean you're not coming to my heroin?
Oh, shit, dude. Yeah, I should have really just left and walked out, but it's chill for a minute, and, you know, she's kind of coming down. I'm saying, look, they weren't on the level we're on, you know. They were kind of uptight. You might have been in that space. It's all good. They're, I might live beside them. Oh, it's horrible. But so anyway, the guy's just like,
that,
Why don't we all step?
I bet they give nice housewarming gifts.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, sparkling cider. But anyway, the dude's like, hey, let's just step behind the building and smoke up. You know, I'm all fucking tense and speedy and all in my head. And I'm like, yeah, some fucking A, weed. That's my jam. Yeah, we're going to do it. And Melissa's so scared. She's just all freaked out that, you know, this whole thing's happened. And then she starts telling me, I think we're being watched since he flashed those drugs. You know, and it's like, I'm just trying to tell her, dude, it's all good. Let's just go out. We're going to walk down behind a building. There's an alley. Oh, Jesus. It's behind a fucking building in Asheville. I guess it's technically maybe an alley, but let's just smoke a little weed. That'll kind of bring us down a notch, you know. And she doesn't want to. She goes, I want to walk around the courtyard. You know, there's a fountain and shit, and she was all staring at that before this part of the story. But I'm like, all right, you walk around the courtyard and kind of entertain yourself, and I'll meet you back. And we synchronized our watches. I'll meet you back at 10:30. So he and I walk around some.
Jeez.
Synchronized your watches. Like,
yeah,
this is the reason why, you know, when SWAT teams are just about to storm a building, they don't take ecstasy. You know, synchronizing your watches don't really exist at that point.
And you're going to hear how this story goes horribly wrong because of synchronizing our watches and apart. But anyway, I'm walking around with this guy, Dave, and I'm explaining why my friend was tripping and that couple and all that shit, you know. Well, dude, I went into a fucking time vacuum that night. I looked at my watch after chilling and talking for a while and said, shit, it's almost 11:30. I got to go get Mel. And his face just goes blank and goes, dude, you're supposed to get her at 10:30. Dude, and it seemed like seconds had only passed, but we ran back and she wasn't there. We went through the courtyard, through the whole bar. We looked around, couldn't find her. So we went to both bars and the restaurant we'd been at before we met up with those – or restaurant we met up at with those people. But the bars we went to before there. And we're on foot, mind you. You know, so it's slow going. And she wasn't anywhere, man. We looked for this fucking idiot for 2 hours. She'd been asking people if they'd seen a short, hot blonde with too much makeup. I was just like putting things wrong. She's really cute, but if you're up close, you
she's
know,
cute, but she's fucking like, up.
Yeah.
She looks like a Picasso.
Nothing. So, I was freaked out to a point after a while, and, you know, don't know about my watch, but, dude, I started calling friends we had in common, people in the class and shit.
Oh, no.
And did no one had seen her. And one was like this chick who lived above me and, you know, she smoked her share of weed and stuff. She was able to understand. And she started calling people, you know, she was not around. We could not find her. We kept, and mind you, two really high people just walking around, but trying to like get to the fountain again. So, you know, anyway, she wasn't
there. It's good to have a mission though. When you're that far off your face, it's good to have something to do, you know,
to aim at. I guess. In some ways, I suppose it is.
Isn't that what they teach in the motivational classes, to set goals and whatnot?
Well, yeah, they do. Sure. They do, but they don't prepare you for if you're fucking off your ass.
Well, this is the thing, though, Dr. P.
And you're in a strange city and a girl and really attractive and by yourself, you know, what to do. And
that motivational class must have rubbed off on you, because by this point, I would have given up a long fucking time ago and said, well, you know, she's over 18. She's not
seriously,
that good looking.
I was, like, afraid I was going to find her just curled in a ball and whimpering or something. I really was. Like, I felt like I need to rescue her.
Raped by a pack of niggers.
Yes, exactly.
But it'd be her own fault. She looked like a pig in heat with bad makeup.
She wore that tight green dress that day, yeah. But, Chris, you know, finally, I went – the guy even followed me home. We walked around my apartment and went inside and stuff. I thought I'd given her a key, but I didn't remember. And in fact, I didn't at the end of the story. And finally, we went back downtown and he dropped me off in his car and I walked home and the sun was coming up. Oh. And still, I'm just thinking as I go home, she'll be there. She'll be somewhere on the porch, you know, just in that horrible reclining chair or something. And she wasn't there.
Wow.
And so I just walk inside and have 47 messages on my machine. And it's just so horrible and so much to deal with. But it's kind of anticlimactic what happened. She had taken a taxi to my address and couldn't get in. And I'd left my car unlocked, and she slept in the back seat of my car.
She was in the back seat of your car the whole time.
I don't know. She was in one piece and in the back of my fucking somehow unlocked car. I live in Nashville. I live downtown where, like, you leave your car unlocked. It doesn't matter if you don't have a stereo. Something's stolen.
Well, I'm kind of convinced. I don't believe in God, and I don't believe in any deities. But there is something to be said for the fact that when you go out and you're completely off of your nut,
yeah,
it's almost like something looking
an
over
angel.
You.
Yeah, you
know. Get in such stupid situations and somehow come out of it unscathed at the other end, and then think to yourself, "But man, did that really happen? And am I still alive?"
Asco here. If you've heard the most recent podcast, you know that we interviewed Justin Louis, who runs the Phil Hendry Show Flashback podcast that's come under fire from the one and only Phil Hendry, very much similar to what SFJ went through not too long ago. I thought it would only be fair to bring an opposing voice on here, somebody who could respond to the allegations that were discussed on the previous podcast. So here he is now, Phil Hendry. Phil, did you know that we did the podcast with Justin, or did you hear it?
What the fuck do you hope to accomplish with that?
Oh, so you did hear it. And what were your thoughts on it?
I will never forgive you for what you've done to me!
That's a little harsh, don't you think?
How fucking dare you! I've done nothing but be nice to you!
Nice isn't the word I would use.
What?
Well, you know, you haven't exactly been the most fan-friendly celebrity on Earth. Whoa, whoa, whoa. What the hell did your fans do to you to get you this upset?
You're a pain in the ass! You're a pain in my ass! Stop being that!
How is somebody that's helping to promote your show and help listeners find their way to your show being a pain in your ass?
What? You make me want to smoke! You fuck my damn! You care about yourself! How dare you!
Phil, you sound a little tense. Is there something wrong?
I need a woman!
Well, I can certainly understand how that would stress you out. Are you you going to go back to MySpace?
No! Fuck you!
So, to sum up, you don't care what kind of promotional tool the podcast can be or whatever else. You just don't want it to happen, and you don't care about any of those listeners that found you because of it. Well, there you have it. I guess that's going to wrap up this interview now with Phil Hendry.
Don't you dare hang up on me. I gave you shit. You gave me nothing but fucking grief.
People gave you their archives.
Bad publicity, you cunt.
Bye, Phil. Try not to have a stroke. And that's it for this edition of the SweetFeatheryJesus.com podcast. If you have a drug story or even a bodily function story or any kind of story or just want to come on the podcast and hang out with us, be sure to send me a PM at the SweetFeatheryJesus.com message board. My username is Belasco. You can also email me at Belasco@SweetFeatheryJesus.com. Please subscribe via iTunes and leave us a rating or a comment if you feel so inclined. Special thanks to my co-hosts, Booze and Dr. P. They're always good to hang out and share an embarrassing story or two with us. There'll be more drug stories coming up on a future podcast, so make sure you get yours in. Good night, everybody.
now.